So this is a second interview with Ray Kanin, who served with the Company 120th Regiment, 30th Infantry Division during World War II. Once again, this interview is being conducted at the Mount Horeb Public Library, and today's date is September 16th, 2008, and the interviewer is Jessica Williams. One of my questions was, how did you happen to take so many pictures?
Another kid by the name of Larry Ellenberg from New York and I were friends, and I knew photography from high school, Mount Horeb High School here, and he could speak German, and when we ended up in this little town, we went to the drugstore and they had a photography shop in the drugstore, and he was able to talk to the owner, and we got his trust, so he let us use his enlarger and stuff to develop film. And our company commander went along with it because the guys all had cameras and stuff that they had picked up in Germany, and so we developed film for the company. So, and that's how I got to make a lot of them. But I picked it up from the camera club in high school here because I made quite a few pictures that time for the Bear Book. I think I was the cameraman for the Bear Book. And the German, after he found out that we weren't going to steal his enlarger and stuff, each day he brought out a few more things and a few more things, and he cooperated with us, and we cooperated with him. So it worked pretty good. They aren't exceptionally good pictures, but we didn't want to use a lot of his paper. That was the jewel that he had, was try to find paper. So we didn't make big pictures. We made just little pocket-sized pictures for most of it.
What are some of the memorable pictures for you from a tree?
Yes, Well, they did. There's one picture in there that I never did ever figure out what happened, but toward the end of the war, we took over a garment factory, and they gave each soldier a roll of cloth to take home, kind of a. And the guys wouldn't leave them in their duffel bag. They took it into Paris and sold them. But and that was I couldn't figure out why the government even let us do it. But I guess they thought we could if we could put them on the bottom of our duffel bag, they'd let them come home. But the guys took them to Paris and sold them. Then they finally said, "Well, you got to turn them in." But most of the guys had got rid of their. There's one picture that kind of tells the story that out there in the ground.
What kind of garment was it?
It was silk, a roll of silk.
And they just gave it to you.
Yeah, they told each guy could take a roll and put it in the bottom of your duffel bag and take it home to your loved ones. But the guys took them into Paris and sold them. So that was kind of a funny thing to happen in the war. But the other thing that I don't know if I mentioned being with Jack Holm when he got killed, did I mention that? Well, Jack Holm and I were classmates over here in high school, and we were basketball managers. And I used to stay in town with him on nights. And then when I went overseas, we didn't know we went overseas. And we were walking down the road over in France, and this kid hollers at me, and here it's Jack. He's laying in the ditch while we go by. And we didn't think to ask for what unit we were in. A couple of days later, I went back with my commander to the battalion headquarters, and there Jack was. So we seen each other quite often. Then when I got wounded and went back, and I came back to the same outfit, Jack was still there. So then we crossed the Rhine River. I got across, and then he came after me. And he got killed that day, March 24th. So I left my high school. Kind of sad. So anyhow, that's. And he's buried over here in our cemetery now in the corner.
I think you did mention this last time a little
Okay.
bit. He was in a house and he was
Yes,
supposed to be downstairs.
suppose he should. He could have been under shelter if he wanted in the house. But
But
he's
for
out in the
some
hallway
reason.
and an air burst and exploded above him and died instantly, from what the fellows told me. And other than that, why. I remember walking over to Magdeburg, Germany. It's kind of interesting. Some days we'd walk and some days we'd ride. They hopped and this came along, and there was a nice big building up on the side hill, and it was a Red Cross, and the yard was full of German soldiers. And the gates were open so we could see them and everything. I thought it was kind of strange that they were out of it. We were still walking the war.
Yeah.
Yep. But we got through it. When we took Magdeburg, there was very little fighting because the Germans had basically then had given up. So uh-huh. The only thing we were worried about then were sniper fires. Somebody wanted to stay and shoot one American, but there wasn't casualties, weren't bad. We didn't have hardly any casualties. We took Magdeburg. That was the end of war. Then we're in Magdeburg. They had a bridge going in the city there, and the Russians were coming to Berlin. So the Germans were coming over to our side to surrender. And we finally had to block the bridge because we were getting too many Germans. We didn't have enough food coming across there to feed them. So we told them, you just got to stay there and take what the Russians give you. So they were a little disappointed that we wouldn't take more prisoners, but they were just streaming out of Magdeburg at the time because they wanted to stay away from the Russians. So they chose us over the Russians.
What was the feeling like back then about the Russians? Like, what were their fears of them?
The Russians were on the other side of the world as far as we're concerned because we didn't fight with them or anything. They were coming from the east to the west. We were going from west to the east, and the Germans were between us. So we never had no contact with the Russians until we saw them.
Why did they have this reputation of,
Well, they had a reputation because I think Germany caused them to have a lot of reputations because they took so many people and put them in concentration camps. Mm-hmm. And the first Germans, I think, were very strong on killing people and taking their land and stuff. It was quite a fight over land and stuff.
So the Russians were more harsh.
Harsh,
on them than the Americans.
And that's right.
That. Mm-hmm.
Okay. And the Russians, I think, were just kind of paying back.
Okay.
They had the city of Stalingrad there where the civilians fought civilians, and that got to be quite a thing. The Americans didn't get in that because we weren't connected with the Russians and the soil, mm-hmm. Russian land. They were fighting the borderlands and stuff. We didn't have that problem.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned in your notes that you were part of the. You went to Buchenwald, I think.
Buchenwald, yes.
Okay. Was that long after it was liberated, or?
No, it was right away. General Eisenhower issued an order that as many American soldiers as possible should see Buchenwald. So we weren't too far from it. So we were trucked over there. And I've got a picture of this truck that shows I was in Buchenwald, but I couldn't take pictures of the people over there. There were still people there. They were in terrible condition. Mm-hmm. But we were feeding them then. Mm-hmm. And we had soup kitchens going and we were feeding them. Mm-hmm. They just opened the gates to the Buchenwald people and said, if you want to go home, all right, and if you want to stay and get fed, all right. But we put clothing on them and stuff and got them health back. So it was right at that time. Of course, we saw the bunks and stuff where they slept.
Mm-hmm. What was that like?
Well, it looked like you just couldn't believe it. It looked like you just wouldn't believe that they could stack that many people in a barracks on hard lumber. Mm-hmm. And you just couldn't believe it. And to see the men that were still around there and stuff, they were just skeletons. They were just skeletons. And, of course, we came with our chocolate bars and cigarettes. And, of course, they had a hard time not giving it to them. But they had great big pots going, big kettles going. They were cooking potato soup and stuff. That's what they wanted to give them, get their systems going again. Because they hadn't eaten probably 3-4 years. They had anything really good to eat. Yeah, it's hard to believe that what they fed them, But then the Red Cross came in there and set up tents and stuff and deloused them, gave them new clothing.
Do you have any idea how many people just walked out when they opened the doors and how many people actually stayed? Was there a great number of people there?
I wouldn't know for sure, but once they realized they were going to get food and clothing and they stayed. And a few of them, I imagine, a lot of them were mentally weren't mentally well enough They didn't know whether they were coming or going. They didn't know where to go. Mm-hmm. They'd been shipped in there and stuff. They didn't know where to go and how to get out. Mm-hmm. They had no money to buy tickets or anything. There was no railroads running that they could. So they were confused people.
Yeah.
And of course I didn't get to see the hospital units. They had hospital units there, but we didn't go into those units because that was none of our business. I mean, there's men in beds and stuff, but mm-hmm. they were sick and we didn't have to bother them.
Right. Mm-hmm. How long were you there? Did you just go for a day or?
We were there. Yes, one full day, mm-hmm. and then we trucked back. We saw enough in one day, though.
Mm-hmm. And it was General Eisenhower that said.
Yeah, mm-hmm. General Eisenhower was when he gave the order. It says many American people, soldiers should see it, mm-hmm. because he, I think he visualized that somebody would say it never happened, and I guess today they still say it didn't happen. And of course, when we got to most of the children were gone. I don't know where the children. We didn't see the section where the children were anyhow. But there were a lot of young children there too. But we didn't see them. We just saw the men.
In your photo album, you have some snapshots of Nazi generals and
yeah.
whatnot. Where was that taken?
That was part of the film that was in the drugstore, and we kind of took over. This man developed film for the Germans,
oh, okay.
and we seen these negatives hanging, so we just made some photos off his negatives.
Okay, but you don't have any idea?
We didn't know, I have no idea what they were, but you could see that they were, Nazism was pretty high up in the mm-hmm. line. I went back to Germany afterwards with some of my friends, and we were in a home, and a lady was showing me a picture of her daughter. And I said, "What's a good-looking picture?" And she in German said, "No, no, bad picture, bad picture." And I said, "Why?" And over the back of the daughter was a picture of Hitler. And she said, "That was a bad picture." And then they explained to us that over in Germany at that time, if you had a big picture of Hitler, you were a Nazi, and if you had a little one, you weren't for him, but you weren't against him either. Mm-hmm. But every home was supposed to have a picture of Hitler in it. And of course, this lady had a picture of her daughter, but she didn't like the picture of Hitler hanging in the background.
Can't blame her.
No.
When you were fighting at the time, did you understand just how awful Nazism was at the time, or did you not really realize it until you stepped into Buchenwald?
Well, I don't think you really realized it. You knew Pearl Harbor had happened on the other side of the world, mm-hmm. and you were 19 years old, just out of high school, and you were trained to be a soldier, mm-hmm. and we were going to take Hitler out before we took the Nazis out, and that's mm-hmm. why we were there. Mm-hmm. History tells you why we went to Germany instead of going to Japan, but I guess that's the way it was. Mm-hmm. Some of them went to Japan. But there was no place over there. They had to get Hitler out first, I guess, and so we went from the invasion, D-Day. And
do you want to explain on the audio about the picture of the German who hung himself and why?
Yeah, the guards that were guarding these camps, mm-hmm. some were there because they wanted to be there and some were forced to be there. Mm-hmm. Now, I have no idea. Why this man hung himself, but maybe just as despondent as the fact that he had to go home or mm-hmm. what he had done. Mm-hmm. I have no idea why he hung himself. But he was in full uniform and everything. He was a German soldier. Mm-hmm. I guess I took that picture because of the fact he was a German soldier. Had he been a civilian, I wouldn't have even bothered, but he was a full-fledged German, so he might have been one of the officers at the camp, and he knew it was wrong, and
had some remorse.
Yep, got remorse over it, hung himself. Huh. Well, when the war was over, we were in Germany, south of Magdeburg, mm-hmm. in a town when they declared the war was over, And then they took the youngest ones that had the shortest time over there. They wanted to send them home so he could come to, so we get home and have a little time in the States and then be sent to Japan. Mm-hmm. And the older soldiers were told that they'd come home after the younger ones went first. So I happened to be one of the younger soldiers with many of us. So they moved us to England to get a ship to come home. And of course, when we were in London, when VJ Day came, so the victory was, the war was over then. Mm-hmm. And of course, we were already billeted for a ship to come home on and stuff. We came home on the Queen Mary. Mm-hmm. So I got to New York, and then when I came to back to Mount Harb, they sent me up to Camp McCoy to watch German prisoners up there for 2 months, and then they discharged me. Had the war in Japan been going on, I'd have stayed home maybe a month and then been shipped to Japan. Mm-hmm. So we got home sooner than some of the older ones that were still over in Germany. Mm-hmm. And I was up in Camp McCoy for about 2 months, and they had, when the war started, they had the SS, they had some of the Germans' better soldiers. They sent them home here and put them in concentration camps. Mm-hmm. And they took care of our camps up here. They cleaned our mess halls and our day rooms and fired the stoves and stuff.
So basically put them to work.
Put them to work. But they were, I'll bet you 50% of those guys right now are American citizens.
The SS Germans.
Yep. I think they saw the way Americans were living and how Germany had been bombed and stuff and no work over there. I think a lot of them just asked for American citizenship and are here now. I know there are.
So you were in Camp McCoy for about 2 months? And
mm-hmm.
Then
I was discharged. Home. You got up by point systems. I don't remember just how many points, so many points for each month. And mm-hmm. They lowered the point system. Finally, you got in that range where you could be discharged.
Uh-huh. And then after the war, did you take anything that you, any skills that you learned as a soldier, did that factor into the career afterwards that you?
No, I haven't lived in Mount Harb all my life. My uncle was a city carrier in Mount Harb, mailman.
Uh-huh.
So when I came home, he retired and the postmaster hired me to replace him. So I worked in the post office 32 years.
Okay. And then did you join any, like, VFW or anything like that?
Yes, I'm a member of the American Legion for 64 years continuously.
Okay.
64 years now continuously. American Legion's was, well, the VFW helps the soldiers too, but the American Legion really helped me. Mm-hmm. They helped me get a state loan for my home. Mm-hmm. They helped me at that time, go to Milwaukee and get an exam to get a disability for the shrapnel I got in my body. Mm-hmm. And they're still helping me today whenever I ask them. Mm-hmm. But the VFW, I'm sure, does the same for their people.
Mm-hmm. This marks the end of the second interview with Ray Kanin.